Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. I'm broadcasting to you live from the Big Apple. That's right, New York City, where blue skies are raining and temperatures are warm and people are buzzing around at a pace that's just incredible. Well, we're going to be sharing some wonderful thoughts with you today, and I have a wonderful guest, Roy Holman, who is with the Holman Health Connections out of Everett, Washington. We're going to be talking about healing self, healing earth. Welcome to the show, Roy.
Thank you, Donna. How are you today?
Just absolutely magnificent. Roy, you have a background where you've done a number of different things. You've been involved in yoga. You have been trained as a teacher in meditation. You've also been involved in healing. You have traveled to South America, Costa Rica, Mexico, Sedona, Arizona. You've been to so many different places where you have shared your skills and talents with others. Wow. Why, you know, this book covers so many different points that empower people to take over their lives, to be able to be aware of themselves. What was it that motivated you to put into writing what you have been sharing with other people? I mean, you've been doing all of these various retreats. Why did you decide you needed to put this book together?
I think in a word, it'd be suffering.
Suffering? Boy, that's a new twist. I haven't heard of that one. So tell us about that. What was that suffering that motivated you?
Well, I think it's kind of like the late great yoga teacher Krishnamacharya said, thank God for suffering. He said, suffering gets our attention. It's the unavoidable motivation for practice, he said. And most of my life was very confused and painful and, you know, the classic dysfunctional, even abusive family situation and even the church situation to some degree. So I came out of that wondering and questioning and just plain boggled. I wandered the earth for several years all over the planet. And then fortunately, I had a fall apart, which at the time felt horrendous, but going through the whole dark night of the soul and the depression and a pretty severe eating disorder, I got down to 99 pounds, actually.
Holy Moses, you mean you were bulimic?
Looking back, it had elements of bulimia, anorexia, and even this word that somebody coined this phrase, or orthorexia, which is kind of rigid eating.
For heaven's sakes.
And it was just part of the symptom, of course, of my own pain surfacing, and it got my attention and got me to dig deeper, and that's what I mean by the suffering taught me, and I decided, boy, I'm going to try to jam everything I know into one book, so hopefully others can do it a little more gracefully and learn from some of my mistakes, and I've learned so many beautiful things about how to walk this journey with a little more ease.
Wow. Now, I know some of my listeners have had to deal with this situation like anorexia and or bulimia, or they've known someone that has gone through this, and it is just horrific, but I have heard more women talk about this. I really have never heard a man say, this is what I did, and I just go, wow. I mean, that's really saying something to be open about that kind of a situation.
Oh, yeah. I think the more inner work I think we do, we realize there's nothing to be ashamed of. We just got to look at things and bring light to it and see that it's all beautiful. And the more work I do, you know, even the eating disorder was so beautiful. I mean, extremely painful that, you know, going through an eating disorder really, you know, challenges the brain. It starves the brain. And I was, I could have easily checked out at any point there. So, and some of the people I met in the eating disorder groups, a few were men, but mostly were women, like you say. Some of them we knew were not going to make it. They were just gotten down too low at their weight and stuff. So it was very challenging. But again, if we can stay present enough and find enough determination and, of course, get a lot of help, we can see, okay, what is this about? What is this really about, this eating disorder? It's not just food. It's certainly first chakra issues when you get involved with food, but it's much more than that. It's control. It's pain. It's often self-hate.
It's a fascinating perspective that you're giving, and we may address a little bit of this later, but I want to share with you today, and I was participating in the National Publicity Summit. I was waiting to be a part, to walk into a hall that was filled with over 100 people, and those of us that were standing in line were chatting. And as it turned out, I was chatting with one of the staff, and this young woman, all of a sudden, she said, "I've got to remember to breathe." And she took a deep breath, and I chuckled, and I said, "Were you holding your breath?" She said, "I teach theater." And she said, "I'm always telling my students, take a breath. Take a breath, because they get so stressed, they get so anxious that they don't realize they're holding their breath. And when they hold their breath, that introduces a rigidness. And that rigidness then makes it very difficult for you to move forward." And your very first section of your book deals with breathing. And you say, "We know not what follows." This is a Tibetan saying that you put in your book. "Our next breath, or our next lifetime." Let's talk about breathing, because this is right off the bat what you go into. And I was thinking, gee, I just had this conversation this morning with someone who was talking about the importance of breathing, and she's in theater, and she's talking about this. But she said, "I find when I get anxious, I hold my breath." Let's discuss this a bit. Why is breathing so? I know if we don't breathe, we're going to die. Okay, so that's it. But how does breathing, different ways of breathing, make a difference?
Well, I think there's several ways of looking at it. I mean, physiologically, of course, we breathe. We're shallow breathers. We've got a lot of trauma. We've got a lot of dense energy on this planet and in our bodies. So we tend to, if we breathe too deeply, we tend to feel more. We tend to stir stuff up. And so I think that's one of the reasons we shut the breath down, so we don't feel too deeply. But when we breathe a lot more deeply, we start to bring up some of those old emotions. And of course, there's lots of life force stuck in that. When we start to loosen it up, we may feel some of the pains and traumas and emotions that we buried, but we also start loosening up the life force beneath it. Now, I start the book in a way kind of like a yoga class. The way I teach my classes, we start with the breath and finish with the breath. And the type of yoga I teach, I think the value in it, the Vinny yoga style that I teach, is that it's very breath connected. Every movement is connected to the breath. So through that whole time, we keep coming back to the present moment, back to the body, back to the present. And that's where the magic happens, in the present moment.
You also say in that first chapter to pay attention. Often I'll say being mindfully present, right with where you are, with what you're doing. And it's a discipline you have to be consciously aware of. And you have something that I just love this description, and I want to share it with my audience. You said when you sat down at your desk to begin the book, there was a yellow butterfly that was on your shoulder. It flew in and it sat on your shoulder. Now, that is a very special experience. Tell us the rest of that story.
Well, everything, I think all the healing starts with attention. And I was starting to write the book with all my doubts about why would someone be interested in what I have to say and all that. And this butterfly just came in, and it landed on one of my frogs first, actually. And frogs are my totem, and that got my attention. And so I said, this is kind of a good start. I'm just starting my book, and this butterfly flies in. And then the very last day when I finished the rough draft of the book, I went outside to sit in the grass and relax, and another butterfly flew up and landed on my shoulder. So I said, I think this book has a potential to help people.
Well, there you've got it. Now, what you've said about the butterfly and the frog is your totem. Being aware of certain things allows you to recognize when you're being given some information. And it's a fascinating phenomena. And I think when you can be mindfully present, Sometimes a dragonfly will fly in front of you. Mm-hmm. Maybe it will be something you see, a picture, something that just touches you in a moment. It helps you to connect with that intuitive part of yourself.
Mm.
And I think that is partially what your story is about. I also like what you said about author Lin Yutang. He said, if you can spend a perfectly useless afternoon in a perfectly useless manner, you have learned how to live. Wow. I read that and I thought, oh my goodness, how many of us would beat ourselves up over the head if we hadn't had something productive done during the day?
Like human doings instead of human beings, eh?
Yes. I mean, really? How many times are we admonished? I've been in seminars, I've been in various groups where they say, well, you should be doing this so many times a day. Well, you should be doing this. And I thought, goodness gracious, if I do any more, I think I'll probably burst just from all the bubbles of frustration because you can't do it all. So what would you tell somebody that has this overwhelming feeling? You're supposed to be on Facebook. You're supposed to be Twittering. You're supposed to be able to talk on the cell phone instantaneously at any moment. You're mm-hmm. supposed to be able to take care of 1,000 emails a day. What would you say to them about spending a useless afternoon?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say first go back to that first part. Take a deep breath. And you know, it's like Eckhart Tolle teaches us so well. You know, Eckhart Tolle talks about, you know, it's more important the spaces between his words than what he actually says. You know, when I get frenzied teachers that are trying to cram so much in, I realize they're not really coming from a real peaceful space. And, you know, there's a paradox to everything. I mean, we are beautiful, magnificent creatures that are here to do profound work on this planet. So it's not like we're going to sit around and lollygag. But most of us, because of this epidemic of low self-esteem, I would argue, we think we need to do more before we're okay in God's eyes or whoever's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good point. You call it an epidemic. When you were writing this book, and I know we have a lot of authors out there that are listening. You're writing this book. Did you put a timetable on it? I mean, did you say, I've got to have this done in 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years? Did you put yourself into that kind of a paradigm?
Oh, at various times I did. I went through quite a ride with the whole thing because I have battled that self-esteem issue big time in my life. I wrote a book before this that got kind of canned by an editor, and I just gave up and threw the book out basically and started a new one here. And I had to just face my demons one by one, and I started to feel this sense of joy that, you know, if it's coming, that's what the book's about, the passion part of awakening presence, power, and passion. I said, you know, if this is coming from my passion, then my will aligns with the divine will. There's no separation there. If it's really coming from my heart, then that's coming from a greater source. And certainly the information just started downloading when I got into that frame where I said, you know, I'm going to just write this from my heart regardless of where it goes or what time frame. And then the magic started happening and it became a lot more fun.
Now that I like. That I like because you didn't say, oh, I had a creative block. What you said is, I'm going to write from my heart. I'm going to write what I feel. And when you do that, I think it makes a big difference, and it also shows through your writing. Reviewing as many books as I do, 400 to 600 a year, I know there's a difference. There's an intellectual side, and then hopefully that intellect, along with feeling, can put something together that can, as you said, touch the heart and mind of someone who is going to be reading it. You have so much diversity in your book, which I really enjoy, because it's a kind of book that someone could pick up at different times and even just open pages at random and just say, I wonder what would be a value on this page. It really has something that puts seeds of intuitive insight as well as practical information into one's mind and into one's awareness. And I think that makes a very significant book. You have a story in here about a girl named Alexa. And one, this is related to the chapter that you said, we need to become like a child. Tell us Alexis' story and what happened with her and a local food bank that she became aware of. And why do you say we should become as a child? I realize I'm rolling these things out at you, so answer them as you will.
Well, I'd have to look back to remember the precise story. I mean, I wasn't gifted with a real perfect memory.
Oh, dear.
But I remember it touched my heart, so I added it in there about a little girl that just basically didn't believe the kind of, unfortunately, these beautiful children come into our world where we're kind of stuck in our head and our left brain with all these fake limits, and we try to have them be like us rather than maybe be more like them. But if I recall, she basically said, you know, there's something we can do. These people are hurting and hungry. Let's do something. And she was able to just gather funds, an amazing amount of money, just by putting this out there with her intention. It was so beautiful and simple and heartfelt.
Yes, and let me add a little bit more detail. This young lady was going to celebrate her 9th birthday. And what happened is that she visited a food bank, and she found that half of the people at the food bank were children. And she found out that $1 with this food bank, $1 could provide 6 meals for a family, $1. And she asked for contributions, just like you said, Roy. And she managed to collect $20,000, dollar by dollar. $20,000, and she presented a check to the local food bank on her birthday. Now, what I found that was so special, she asked for donations instead of presents because she said people are hungry.
People are hungry.
And this addresses emotional, what you say is emotional honesty. This is a powerful story. A 9-year-old girl collecting $20,000 for a food bank. That's incredible.
Well, are you familiar with the terms, the psychic children and the indigo children, the crystal children?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you probably talk about this on your show, but there's a new breed of children coming into this world that are helping us through this transition, and they don't know the old duality and separation consciousness, the survival of the fittest stuff. They're here to work together, and that's all they know. And I think some of them are overwhelmed by what they see once they get here, you know, out of spirit into physical form with the density we've created. But they are going to be up to the task, and they're going to help with this transition.
Well, I think that, again, your book has so many variables. There's a statement in your book, and it's just a follow-up to what you have just mentioned. The statement is, I have fear, but I am not my fear. Now, let's come full circle with what you said about yourself earlier because of your physical challenges that you went through.
Mm-hmm.
This was part of your journey facing your demons.
Right. I think that might be the next the title of my next book. I'm doing an autobiography, and it might be A Man with Feelings, because that's what I had to learn. As most of us do, we tend to deny and bury our feelings. We have a very low emotional literacy or intelligence in this country and in much of the world. So I had to learn to face these amazing old angers and things that were starting to stir and come to the surface. I just wanted to pound them back down like a whack-a-mole game, you know. But I realized, wow, these guys need my attention, and there's so much love and life force beneath them. Because anytime we lock away a supposedly negative emotion or charge, beneath that is our life force. So if we can bring love to that and light, you know, the dark just can't survive without the light around it.
Now let's talk about the yin and the yang, because you've just mentioned the light and the dark. And in our world, we have that. People can make choices that are not so positive, and they can make choices that are very positive. So many of us, we go through life, we make our choices, and then we go, whoops, I screwed up royally here. What a goofball I am. Bringing a balance out, you look at the world today, we have wars going on in different parts of the planet, atrocities being done, humans to humans, humans to animals. It's just absolutely awful. you just mentioned how we have a younger generation that's coming in that's not really aware of that. Yet I've seen the other side of the coin, a lot of younger people, a lot of today's adults that are trying to pass along their fears, and in many respects are doing a pretty good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you address this, and you talk about patience and surrender. So talk with us a little bit about the yin and the yang, patience, surrender, and the other side of the coin, mm-hmm. action and assertiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Well, it is a world of duality that we're in this 3D form here, so we'll have to deal with these kind of things. And there is an important balance. We've been locked in the head, some would say for thousands of years since Atlantis days, that we've been locked not only in the head, but in the left side of the head, the supposedly logic left and male brain. And that's gotten us into a little bit of trouble.
A wee bit, yes.
Balance to be found coming over not only just to the right brain, but especially the heart. The more and more I learn, is the heart is where it's at, where we can completely trust that childlike truth that exists there. The feminine, I think, is on the rise. We've kind of dishonored and buried and feared the feminine for so long. I think that is getting respect, and it's going to come more and more into a balance in the forefront. So I feel very, very good about it, where we headed. Although, again, looking at it from a linear perspective, it looks like hell, and it looks very painful. And you know, that's one of the other reasons I wrote this book, not just my own suffering. I just feel such a connection with the earth, and what we've done to each other and the earth is extremely painful. And it's taken me years to try to find not a non-feeling type of ignorance, but just an acceptance. Okay, this is where we are. Where do we want to go? What do we want to build?
I agree. You have a quote in here by William Wordsworth, "Habit rules the unreflecting herd." There's also the saying, if you follow a herd, you're going to step on a lot of poop. So both of those are saying, think for yourself. Mass hypnosis is done effectively via various forms of media, has been done that way for a long, long time. And to detach and to be able to think for yourself means that you have to have a courage to be willing to look inside about who you are, what is most important to you, and why it is most important to you. When you were going through your challenges, what was one of the most difficult things for you to be open and accepting of about yourself, Roy?
Mm. Well, I think of just the pain. I started when I was doing my human rights work. I finally found something I enjoyed where my heart was in, but my ego wrapped all around it. I hadn't done the inner work. So when my life fell apart and I realized that, wow, I'm not Mr. Gandhi here yet. I've got tremendous pain that I haven't looked at. So it was very startling and disrupting to see that I had buried so much old hate and anger and fear and victim consciousness. And then, of course, even harder than that, I think, for me and many of us, is not just owning the dark side, so to speak, is the light side. But getting peaks along the way of my greatness and my divine nature and feeling, oh my God, I am capable of anything, just like any of us, beautiful, unique, sparks of the divine here. That was very hard to start to say, okay, I'm going to have to stand a little brighter and see if I get shot down here and start to realize that nobody can really shut me down once I stand that bright.
I had to chuckle when I read your story about some brown rice. Now, this to me was really fun. It's in your section on life force energy. And you said that there was a friend of yours that performed an experiment. She cooked a pot of brown rice. Mm-hmm. This is for real, folks. This is what she did. She placed an equal amount of rice into two carefully chosen, identical, sterilized glass jars. She put a label on each jar facing in towards the rice. One said, "You are beautiful rice. You will have a long life." Now remember, she just wrote this on a label. Then on the other one, she said, "You're horrible rice. You will perish quickly." She put them in light-proof bags in the refrigerator. And after 90 days, she pulled them out. The first one smelled fresh and edible, as if cooked the day before. The second one was green and moldy. Now, I've heard this done with plants, but with brown rice, for heaven's sakes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've heard a lot of, I've heard stories on water plants, and this was one of my students just a few months ago, actually. But it doesn't surprise me. I mean, that it's all energy, and when we grow up in a situation where our parents or the society beats us down due to their own fear or ignorance, when we get told that this is the best we can do, that you cannot walk on water, and we're going to think that's completely silly. And especially for a society that's locked in the supposedly logical left brain, where I had one of my students argued a little bit about that one day. He said, you know, Jesus is just a myth, you know, when you talk about walking on water. That's ridiculous. But we're so capable of miracles.
Mm-hmm. We really are. Now, speaking of miracles, and there might be some individuals listening that say, I don't believe in miracles. Of course, I do. And you say the most important thing is to let go and trust that the universe will handle the details, often in surprisingly creative ways. For this process to succeed, ideally, we must clear any inauthentic intentions, as well as restricting emotions such as fear and guilt. Talk to us about this and give us an example so that people have a mental visual that they can work with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what happens and what happened with me at first when I started to face some of my pains and stuff that were surfacing, I tended to judge them all and beat myself even further. But then the next step is to start accepting a little bit more and letting go a little bit of the guilt and judgment. And then we can get to hopefully a little closer to the heart. Like I said earlier, the heart doesn't have anything that is that you can't trust. It's completely trustworthy. So if you can, and I think this is where they went a little bit off on The Secret, to be honest. I think they got a little bit into the head with their creativity. They had some really good stuff in there. But when we create from the head, it tends to create from polarity. And you can have other consequences, but the heart will create just the good. You cannot create bad through the heart because it doesn't work that way. It's not a duality kind of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the importance of the heart.
Well, and I think sometimes when we can let things go, and that's not always easy to do because, again, we try to control as much as we can. I raise my hand. I'm one of those people. By God, I'm going to be out there and I'm going to follow A to Z in the book. And then I go, whoops, that isn't working. Okay. Out that goes. And then all of a sudden things will start into play, fall into place. Sometimes it is quickly. Sometimes it might take years.
That's
right. And people look at it and they'll say, wait a minute. I want to have that extra $500 million. I want this day after tomorrow. Thank you very much. After all, I've got $499.9 million that I owe, so I've got to take care of this. But and I'm being facetious, of course, when I'm using those numbers, but I'd like to make the point. Sometimes there's a process and a journey of experience that we need to become aware of. And
yeah.
In doing that, then we become alive. We're not just existing.
Yeah, I could use the my book as an example of that. You know, if I listened just to that one, the old tapes and my old wounds on the left side of the head and the brain that said, no way, there's a million books out there, don't trust that passion, it would have gotten nowhere. But I had to just trust this process that wasn't going to be an overnight thing. I had to face the demons and whatever blocks arose and then gently ease my way back to the heart, and then the book came out.
You have a quote by Nelson Mandela that I think is a powerful quote, and I have a great deal of respect and admiration for this man. He said, part of being optimistic is keeping one's head pointed towards the sun, one's feet moving forward. There were many dark moments when my faith in humanity was sorely tested, but I would not and could not give myself up to despair. That way lay defeat and death. Boy, those words are so poignant and so very, very powerful, so very, very meaningful, because that's what we have to keep in mind. There always is going to be the ugliness in one way or another. But what are we as individuals committed and dedicated to? Roy, I know we're just about out of time here, and you have done a wonderful job with this book. There is a lot for someone to read, to mentally chew on. And I always tell people, when you have a book, what you do is read it and see what touches your heart and your mind and your spirit. And your book has so many sections in it that apply in various ways to life. It's got a lot of meat, I think, in it, in substance and meaning. Now, what is your website that people can go to?
Okay, it's www.holmanhealthconnections. My last name's Holman, H-O-L-M-A-N, and then healthconnections with an S.com.
All right, holmanhealthconnections.com. There you'll find more information about Ray Holman and his book, Healing Self, Healing Earth. Covers a lot of different modalities, and you're going to be able to have a feel for that. Roy, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. And also, he's with Holman Health Connections in Everett, Washington. So I'm so delighted you were with me. Are you still
thank
there, Roy?
You. Thank
yes.
you, Donna. It's been really fun.
Oh, great. Well, this is Donna Sebo in New York City. Roy Holman, check out his website, holmanhealthconnections.com, broadcasting to you today from the Big Apple, New York City, whose lights are now shining. The sky is getting dark, and the city is alive. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, the number to dial in to is worldwide toll-free, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. It's always wonderful to be in New York. New York is an incredible city. Man, if you love to shop, you can shop here too. You drop, and you can't even begin to scratch the surface. People with all kinds of products and services. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. This city is just incredible. No matter where you go, there are different languages being spoken. It's just great. I mean, I can understand why people have filmed so much in New York, because you find anything and everything, good, bad, and indifferent. It is concentrated like you wouldn't believe. You could sit on a corner and you literally can have a world of worlds walking right by you. It's just an awesome, awesome city, and the people are incredible. I really enjoy them, especially the taxicab drivers. Oh, they have so much information to tell you. And I'll have to share with you, I had a shuttle ride coming into New York. It took me 3 years. It felt like 3 years. It took 3 hours for me to get from JFK into downtown Manhattan. Traffic is amazing. I'm sitting with a shuttle driver, and it is an experience that you never forget when you go through it. This shuttle driver did things that in a gazillion years I would never do. Of course, you're driving in New York, so you have a whole different set of rules. Actually, there aren't any rules, I think, but that's beside the point. He was amazing how he manipulated in and around traffic, thousands of pedestrians. I mean, it just was incredible. And I asked him at one point, when I was almost at my destination, how many years he had been driving. He said, 22. And all I could do was sort of gasp. He had survived for 22 years driving in New York City. Amazing. But that's the reason he was able to get in and out and everywhere and know what to do, when to do it, how to do it, because it's a whole different environment here. Okay, telephone number for you to call in to 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to dial. And if you have not done this before, all you need to do is give me your first name or your initial. Yes, I can talk to you no matter where you are. Even though I'm here in New York, hey, call into the studio, and I can still give you a reading on the air, and all I need is your first name or initial. Of course, I'd love to know where you're calling from. Tomorrow, we've got a very special subject. This is one that is especially meaningful to me because my family and, of course, many clients through the years have had challenges like this. This book is titled, What's a Parent to Do? Dr. Abraham is my guest. We're going to be talking about teenage addiction. And this is absolutely one of the best books I have read in a long, long time. So I think you'll find it interesting. And then next week, I'll be back in the Northwest. We're going to be talking about Mars Covers and his book, Stars When the Sun Shines. Now, this is a man who traveled all over the world. And we're going to be talking about his experiences and how his philosophy of life developed. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about four-ingredient vegan. That's right. Mary Beth Abrams is going to be my guest. Now, if you're a vegan and if you're a busy person, you may wonder what you can do to fix easy meals. But you know what? This book is good for anybody. If you want good vegetable dishes that are going to be tasty, this is a wonderful cookbook to have. You don't have to be a vegan. So we're going to be talking recipes on Tuesday. And then Tommy Spaulding, his book, Not Just Who You Know. Tommy has so much wisdom in how to move forward in your life, how to get out of being stuck, how to understand that your right to success doesn't mean you have to know the Trumps and the other people in the world that have all of these designated titles. There's ways that you can achieve what you want to achieve. Then next week, we're going to be talking with Margaret Hawkins, How We Got Barb Back. Now, this is about schizophrenia. This is a very personal story. This is about her sister, Barbara, who had a mental illness and how, after many, many years, her sister actually came into a positioning of communication and normalcy. Heartwarming, absolutely great. And then on the 29th, we're going to have an open mic day. So that is going to be a week from tomorrow. Great lineup of guests. Tell your friends about the show. And just know that these people, every one of them that I have on the air, have something to give you in the way of a gift. And that gift is a part of themselves, a part of their thinking, a part of their experience. And you may find that it's going to help you or maybe someone that you love. So that's what's coming up. And I wanted to let you know, I have come across a wonderful, wonderful recipe. Actually, I've got a bunch of them. And you know how I like sharing recipes. This one is a quick banana coffee cake strudel muffins. This is really super, very flavorful, and if you like bananas, this is something I think you will enjoy. So get yourself a pad of paper and a pen handy, because it's very, very easy to make, and I'm going to be sharing it with you. I wanted to thank Debbie for sending me a wonderful story, and I wanted to share this with you. It's about a blind boy. He was sitting on the steps of a building with a hat by his feet, and he was holding up a sign which said, "I am blind, please help." Now, there, in the hat, some people had put some coins, and there was a man who walked by, saw the boy's sign, and he took a few coins from his pocket, and he dropped them into the hat. And then he took the sign, turned it around, and wrote something on the sign. And he put the sign back so that everyone who walked by would see this new sign. Well, the hat started to fill up with money. More people were reading this sign and saying, "Oh, here, I'll put in some change." Well, that man, that same day, later on, came back to see the blind boy, to see how things were going for him. Now, this boy recognized the steps of this stranger and asked him, "Are you the man who changed my sign this morning?" The man said, "Yes, I am." The boy then asked him, "What did you write?" The man said, "I only wrote the truth. I said what you said, but in a different way. This is what I wrote. Today is a beautiful day, but I cannot see it." Now, both signs gave a message to people that the boy was blind. But the first sign simply said that he was blind. The second sign told people that they were so lucky they were not blind. Of course, we know which sign was far more effective. So it brings a thought. We need to have an attitude of gratitude for what we've got. We also need to realize that sometimes we have to be a little bit more creative, innovative. We also need to realize that thinking outside the box, changing our own paradigms, is not a bad thing. And a positive attitude isn't being Pollyannish. It means that you have faith and belief not just in yourself, but in life itself. And Debbie had a note here. She said, "When life gives you 100 reasons to cry, show life that you have 1,000 reasons to smile. Face your past without regret. Handle your present with confidence. Prepare for the future without fear. Keep the faith and drop the fear." And the most beautiful thing is to see a person smiling, and even more beautiful, knowing that you're the reason behind it. It makes a difference. It really does. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. If you'd like to chat with me and let me light up your life, call me at 888-815-9756. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a moment. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800 872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, have you got that pad of paper handy and pen? Banana muffins absolutely are one of the most wonderful baking aromas that you could ever have. And lots of times we wonder how we can fix something like this and have it taste good. And, oh, it's just so easy to do these. Now, I've got some tips about toppings, and you know, lots of times when you go into bakeries, you're going to pay sometimes as much as $4 or $5 for a muffin. Why not make some of your own? These are quick banana coffee cake streusel muffins. So if you're like me, you love to bake, and you'd like to have something that is so fragrantly delicious that when people walk into your kitchen and they smell it, their saliva buds are just really going to be overwhelmed. Now, this is what you need to have. First of all, you're going, and this is going to make up 12 muffins. And so if you wanted to make them super big, you know how we go out and we get the super big muffins, then it's going to make 6 of those. Now, you're going to have something for your streusel topping. So you're going to need a half a cup of all-purpose flour, half a cup of all-purpose flour. You're going to need four tablespoons, a half a stick of butter, and you want to cut them into small pieces. And you need to let them be at room temperature. So cut them when they're cold, and then just let them sit in a dish at room temperature while you're preparing the other ingredients. You're also going to need a half a teaspoon of cinnamon, and just mix that right in with your flour. All right, you put that aside. That's for your topping. Now, this is what you're going to need for the muffins. You're going to need 3/4 cup of sour cream. Don't use the non-fat. You need the fat from the cream. And don't worry about calories here, because what you're going to have is delicious flavor. You're going to need 3/4 cup of sour cream, 2 bananas, and the riper the bananas, the better. And then a teaspoon of cinnamon, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1/4 teaspoon ground ginger, a teaspoon of salt, a teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 large egg, and that should be at room temperature too. You're going to need 3/4 cup of firmly packed brown sugar, 2 1/2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking soda. You're going to need 4 tablespoons, another half stick of butter. Again, you want to cut this into small pieces. Let it soften at room temperature. This is how simple it is. You heat your oven to 350 degrees. And, of course, you want to coat your muffin tin, whether it is for the super muffins or super-sized muffins or regular muffins. And if you want, you can use your paper muffin cups if you like to do that. I sort of like the crust myself, the firmness of texture without using that, but whatever is your choice is fine. Now, in a food processor, your streusel, you want to put your flour, your butter, your brown sugar, and cinnamon. You just let it go, you know, just be whipped into a frenzy for 15 seconds or until it's really well blended. And it should be slightly clumpy, like clumpy wet sand. Now, remember, if you don't have a Cuisinart, just use a couple of knives. That's right. You can just cut the butter in, or even just use your fingers, and you'll find that that is going to be a wonderful way. I like to use plastic gloves or rubber gloves, like the surgical gloves, whenever I'm doing a mixture with my hands, because it just makes it a lot easier for cleanup. But that's your choice. And anyway, then you're going to put that, you just have that in the bowl, and you put it to the side. Now, the muffins, in a food processor, if you have it, you want to combine your sour cream and bananas, and you want to process that until it's just silky smooth. Take less than a minute. And then if you don't have that, if you have a mixer, then do that with a mixer, a hand mixer. You can mix your sour cream and your bananas and just keep beating it until it gets nice and smooth. I'd recommend a higher speed. Start out low if you have a hand mixer. If you've got a processor, just let it do the job for you. Then you want to add in your cinnamon, your ginger, your salt, your vanilla, your egg, and your brown sugar. And again, in the Cuisinart, just process it, mixes it in a few seconds. If you're using a beater, then all you need to do is just zip it together. It doesn't take long at all. After that, you're going to add your flour, your baking powder, baking soda, and your butter. Now with this, when you're adding these last few ingredients, you process it not until it's real smooth, but only until it's combined. So it's just a few seconds. That's all it's going to take. And then what you want to do is add a quarter of the streusel mixture that you've put it to the side. Take one quarter of that, and just, if it's in the processor, just zip, zip, just two or three times. That'll mix it. If you're doing it, you can mix it in by hand if you want. Just fold in that streusel by hand. Then what you want to do is, it's about a quarter of a cup of the mixture for a 12 muffin tin setup. So quarter of a cup of your batter goes into each muffin cup. If you're doing double, it's a half a cup, right, if you're going to make the big muffins. And then what you want to do is top them with a heaping spoonful of your streusel topping, and you want to press it lightly into the top of the batter. And that way a little bit of it sort of weeps down into the batter itself. Gives wonderful flavor. And you're going to bake your smaller muffins, your regular muffin size, so about 18 minutes, but you need to check it dependent on your oven and how your oven bakes. Take a toothpick. I like to use, when I'm testing something in the oven, those long wooden skewer sticks. I get them at the dollar store. And you just, it makes it so easy. A regular toothpick is often too short for me. So I use one of those long skewer sticks, and that way I don't have to worry about burning my hands. And I just go in, check it out. And if anything's sticking to that stick, I know I just have to bake it a little bit longer. And if you're going to be baking the large muffins, you may want to check your muffin mixture at 20 to 22 minutes. Again, it depends on how your oven is with its baking patterning. You're the one that knows that best. And this is absolutely wonderful. And it's going to smell so good. And remember, when it's taken out of the oven, after you've baked it, you let it cool in the pan for maybe about 5 minutes. And then that makes it easier for you to take it out. But don't leave it in your baking pans for longer than 5 minutes, because then it'll start to get, there's a texture difference. So make sure you have some place where you can let them cool on a rack. And they are wonderful. And they are just absolutely delicious with hot butter. I know we've already got butter in it, but when you serve them hot like that, not only do they smell wonderful, but they are absolutely delicious. And you will find that it's just great, especially when the weather's getting cooler and you want something special, maybe for a summer breakfast, or maybe you just want to treat yourself to something that you take to work. So that is a great, great recipe to give. Donna Sebo here. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, all you need to do is call 888-815-9756. And don't forget, tomorrow we are going to be talking about teenagers and drug addiction problems, also alcohol addiction. This is something that is exceptionally important. I don't know of a family that hasn't been affected by this kind of a condition or situation on one level or another. And I know my family was affected with it, so I'm really looking forward to having Dr. Abraham. I've got a delightful poem by Lola Martinez about Halloween. Yes, it's coming up. Before we know it, all the goblins and creatures of the mystical Halloween scene are going to be out, and there's going to be all kinds of parties and a wonderful opportunity to have a good time, maybe dressing up in your favorite character. Well, I have a beautiful, beautiful photograph in front of me of a pumpkin that is lit from within by a candle, been beautifully carved, and there's a black cat that's right up by the pumpkin, and it's checking it out. And Lola wrote this poem that I thought was just delightful. There's something about a pumpkin patch at the break of dawn that speaks of chilly winds and cozy nights and a black cat's howling song. It paints a picture of giggling children running up and down the block, ringing doorbells and shouting, "Trick or treat! Give us all the goodies you've got." I have so many fond memories with Halloween growing up. We used to know the women in the neighborhoods that really got into the Halloween theme, and they would bake up all kinds of goodies or they'd buy special candies, and oh, we always made sure that we hit their houses first because it was just so exciting to find out what it was that they had prepared with loving care. And of course, we would always be stuffing our faces as we were walking along because we knew if as much as we could get in and we could eat before we took our stuff home, our stash home, then moms and dads would say, "Sorry, you can't have this, but by golly, we sure did enjoy it during the process." There's so much fun with the holiday, and I would say that if you're going to be attending a party, just remember that it's fun. And I know sometimes there are people that say that Halloween is the work of the devil or whatever, but you know what? It's a creative time, and I have encountered so many people that have so much fun at experiencing their creativity with this holiday. So I hope you will too. This is Donna Siebel broadcasting from New York City, the Big Apple, and I'll be back with you tomorrow right here, same time, same place, at bbsradio.com, station one, and again, from the Big Apple. Look forward to talking to you. Have a fabulous, fabulous time wherever you are. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.